Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Steve Savitsky here with Savitsky Talks. And today I have Rabbi Reuven Spalter, who is a good friend of the union and writes a lot of articles and speaks on our behalf, former rabbi in the States who was fortunate and was smart enough to make Aliyah. Rabbi Spalter, how are you?
How are you, Steve? Great talking to you.
Okay, great. Wonderful, wonderful. So I know you're involved in many, many different things. I always look forward to your articles. They're always so interesting and well-written. And you have a very nice one in the Jewish Action, and it deals with the rabbinic Sherlock Holmes, you call it, basically about a case that you had to take care of and all the components about what goes on in Israel. So first of all, you're involved in it. I know that you're, I know you teach in the yeshiva there in Orot. And you're also, you oversee the rabbinic coordinator for the Tzohar Rabbinical Organizations. So what does that mean exactly? What do you do?
All right, first let me clarify. Thanks for having me. I am a Judaic Studies instructor at a women's college called Michlelet Oro Israel in Elkanah, first of all. And I am also what's called, as you mentioned, the rabbinic overseas coordinator for an organization called the Irgun Rabbani Tzohar, which is one of the largest religious Zionist rabbinic organization in Israel. Part of many, many things. We have Tfilot and Yom Kippur, and Megillah reading on Purim, and a number of other initiatives that aim to make the Jewish state more Jewish. But Tzohar is mostly known for, and mainly known for, the weddings that it performs, in that couples can marry under the auspices or through the services of Tzohar, as opposed to going to their local rabbinate. If they choose, they can go to Tzohar and apply to get married and then be married by a Tzohar rabbi. And the way it works through Tzohar is that, first of all, the rabbis are all volunteers. They're religious Zionist rabbis. They're all volunteers. And the couples meet with every rabbi. They meet the rabbi at least one time in his home before they have the wedding. And then the rabbi goes and volunteers and promises not to take any money to do the wedding. And this is an opportunity for just tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Every year now, Tzohar does between at least 3,500 and 4,000, almost all totally secular weddings in Israel. And it's an incredible number. I think we're over 4,000 a year now.
Really?
And I've become a volunteer Rav Mechatein, one of the rabbis who does weddings. And
right.
It's a trip, I got to tell you. You meet a couple you never would have met in your life. You bring them into your home. You talk to them about what it means to build a Jewish home. You talk to them about the wedding. And then you go, and if all goes well, you give them a great opportunity, a great experience, you know, on their wedding day. They want to have a spiritual experience. They want it to be nice. And here you have rabbis who are volunteering through Tzohar to make the wedding wonderful. So that's the background about Tzohar in general.
That's interesting. Let me answer this question. So most of these would be people who probably, if not for Tzohar, would probably do civil marriages. Is that what would happen?
Some would marry through their local rabbinate. Some would. Many would, I think, but they're looking for a different kind of experience. Many have told us that they would have gone to Cyprus or they would have gone to civil marriage because they're not interested in going through the rabbinate. You know, I've had a number of cases where the couple themselves said, yeah, we weren't going to do it, but then we heard about Tzohar or we were at a Tzohar wedding and we said, you know, this is what we want to have. And it's just a tremendous, like, every time I do a wedding, you feel, another Jewish couple, another bike.
No, it sounds really, really marvelous. And of course, I presume that the this is all accepted by the Israeli rabbinate and, you know.
Okay, so if you really would like to, the way it works is every wedding must be done through an official rabbinate. So every Tzohar wedding is done either through the rabbinate of Gush Etzion or of Shoham. Shoham is the rabbi of Shoham is Rav Stav, so he's the official rabbi. So either the rabbi of Gush Etzion or the rabbi of Shoham, it gives the official approval for the wedding. So I don't know if you remember, but maybe it was 2 years ago. The Rabbi Luda Rashid, you know, because of the pressure from the local rabbinates, they weren't very happy that thousands of couples were going to Tzohar. So they tried to reinforce the law. The law used to be in Israel that you had to apply at your local rabbinate. And so they tried to enforce the law and shut Tzohar down. So Tzohar was forced to go to the Knesset to collect for a law which would simply allow a couple to apply to marry anywhere they wanted, at any rabbanut. And I don't know if you recall, but it was tremendous battle from the Knesset back and forth until the law called the Chok Tzohar was passed. And the Chok Tzohar simply said you could marry anywhere you want in Israel. You didn't have to, you could marry through any rabbanut you wanted to. And that allows Tzohar to continue to exist today. And to be honest with you, we're actually expanding. Right now, we had until now only one office in Lod, and every couple that applies had to physically go to Lod to apply. And we're in the process of opening an office in Yerushalayim and opening an office in Haifa, and so we expect the numbers to expand dramatically in the coming years.
Uh-huh. So you're not limited anymore by the geographic boundaries. You're now free to go any place you want, and that opens up the whole process.
Correct. That opens up the whole process. Mm-hmm. Mind you, we do not advertise the weddings. We don't advertise at all, not one bit. And it's all just word of mouth. Meaning every couple that comes, it's because they were at a wedding, their friend got married, and that's a testament to the fact that it's meeting a need, that these couples are looking for something, they're looking for a good experience. Sometimes they're looking for a rabbi that's not going to ask them for money, to be honest with you. But
okay.
If that's the door to get them to have a meeting with a rabbi in an Orthodox home, I think that's well worth the price, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it's great. So in the article, I mean, you talk about how, I guess there's a lot of detective work, because sometimes you're not always, you have to be certain that these people are Jewish. Is that your responsibility? Is that your responsibility?
Correct.
Or, oh, I see, okay.
Well, let me explain. It's important to clarify. So adheres to every single, rule of the Rabbanut HaRashit. We don't cut corners, God forbid, and it's all halakha, kedat v'chadin, of course. So one of the rules that the Rabbanut HaRashit instituted is that every couple, every single person who applies to marry in Israel has to prove their Jewish status. Whether you're Israeli, you came from Russia, you came from America, every single person. So for many Israelis, it's actually easy, because if your parents were married under the Rabbanut, then you bring a ketubah, you bring a document attesting to the fact that your parents were married in Israel, and you're all set to go. The same is true, usually, for Orthodox people, meaning if you're Orthodox and you moved to Israel, I moved to Israel, I made Aliyah, I can't write myself a letter, but I can either bring the ketubah, that my Rav did, or I can get a letter from another Orthodox rabbi, and it's accepted by the Rabbanut, and everything is fine. What happens, though, when you have cases where you don't know the identity of the ketubah, or it's hard to find documents, or, for example, people are coming from Russia and they have to prove their Jewish status? As we all know, hundreds of thousands of them. So Tzohar has an office called Shorashim. In the Shorashim branch, what it does is it helps Russians, for example, by having offices in, I think one is in Moscow and one is somewhere in the Ukraine. It goes back and helps Russians. We've helped tens of thousands of Russians prove their Jewish status. That's one thing. What do I do? I'm in charge of approving documents, or I'm explaining exactly what I'm in charge of doing, approving documents from English-speaking countries. So, for example, a Kala wants to get married, and her parents made Aliyah from England. So they will present her ketubah, and that ketubah will be scanned and sent, put in the system, and I have to go and look at that ketubah and make sure that it's an authentic ketubah approved by the chief rabbinate of the chief rabbinate of England. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that the first thing that I do is I would call it Ishurei Yahadut, meaning this person presented a document, is it authentic? This person presented a letter, is it from a recognized Orthodox rabbi? Is it from an acceptable Beit Din? Truthfully, the person presented documents for conversion. Is it from a recognized Beit Din or not? That also has to be approved, And we are very often in close consultation with the Rabbanim in America from across the country, California to New York. I'm in touch with them on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. When someone brings in a ksuba, I mean, it doesn't really say who the Rav was. It just talks about
Right? Usually it does not, which is a problem. Usually it does not, because we're assuming you must know the identity of the Masada Kedushin.
Right.
Because the Masada Kedushin, it's his responsibility, and it was his responsibility, to ascertain that the people that he's marrying were, in fact, Jewish. That's as far as we go. You know what I'm saying? If we have a Masada Kedushin that we know was a Shomer Halachat, a rabbi, be a Rabbi Yisrael, so we are confident and we can assume that this person made the proper inquiries to ensure that the people he married were Jewish. What happens, though, when you don't have a name on a ketubah? What do you do? How do you know? What do you do? So we were presented, the case that I described in the article,
right.
We were presented with a ketubah from an Israeli couple. Mind you, very often these people are living in Israel for decades. So now this is a young woman whose parents made Aliyah 30 years ago. The father was, I don't remember from where, the mother was from South America. They moved to Toronto for 2 years before they moved to Israel. They married in Toronto. They submitted a ketubah, And all they told us was, all we remember was done in the Orthodox show. We don't know anything about it. Go ahead. Now, is that enough to prove that they're Jewish or not? And the answer is, you have to know who did the wedding. How do you know who did the wedding? So then I wrote an article about the, and what they said was, fascinatingly, the reason why this came to our attention, in Sohar, one of my mandates is, we don't just say, sorry, you didn't prove to me, you know, goodbye, you have to prove to me or else it's not accepted. One of my mandates, and the thing that takes most of my time, is this idea that it's our responsibility to try to help. That this couple came and they presented a ketubah, and instead of saying, I'm sorry, I don't know where it's from, we take it as a responsibility of ours, it's a responsibility of mine, to do whatever I can do to try to help this person prove their Jewish status. So, the article describes the hours of work that it took to...
Right, no, it's fascinating. I mean, you know, the detective work and all the little components that came by and that you had to work on. Wouldn't it be interesting, is it possible to have the name of the rabbi on the ksuba? Wouldn't that help, like, down the road?
Of course it's possible. In the on Israeli ketubah, they write the rabbi's name, the Masada Kedushin. On the RCA ketubah, there's two sides. So in the Hebrew side, it doesn't say the name of the rabbi, but on the English side, it does.
I'll buy
that every rabbi should sign it. You know what I'm saying?
When you go to a wedding and you hear the rabbi read the ksuba, I've never heard him say, you know, he gives the name of the Edim, but then doesn't say Masada Kedusha and Rav, whatever, which would be great, because
right,
25 years from now, who knows what's going to be?
Exactly. You wouldn't necessarily know how to read it. You wouldn't have to read the name of the rabbi, but there's no reason why you could put on the side. You know, I have to be honest with you, if somebody were asking me now, because of the experience that I've had, every rabbi, if I would take a picture of the ketubah and send it and, you know, put the name of the Masada Kedusha and the place of the wedding, I think that's just sound advice.
You mean put it on the back of the ksuba, write down the name of the rabbi, where it took place, when the wedding took place, and so on and so forth.
Exactly.
That's a good idea.
Because, ironically, the whole point of the ketubah, the Edim are there, but we have no idea the names of Edim anymore because we don't... There's a certain sort of irony in the fact that the Edim are there in order to legitimize the ketubah, but go tell me who Yankel Moshe Ben Baruch is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. You have no idea. And a lot of times, as a matter of fact, sometimes I know they actually put the last name, but most times that I've listened, they don't even put the last name. It's whatever it is. You're right.
Correct. And then go ahead and try to read it. It's not always obvious that you're able to read the names on the ketubah. You know what I'm saying?
True.
So it involves a lot of detecting. In this case, it ended up that it turns out that the rab who was a Masada Kedusha, one of the rabbanim in Toronto, recognized the name of one of the Edim. And it turns out very often, if you have smaller weddings, you know, let's say a rabbi did it in his study or whatever, he'll serve as one of the Edim. So it turns out that the rav, who was clearly in the Masada Kedusha, was, you know, as it was in handwriting, he was an aide. And it turns out he was a great gadol, a great posek in Toronto. So we were able to approve the case. But that's after talking to South America and London and a relative in Israel. You know what I'm saying? Finally, we're able to approve the case. But in this case, ironically, the father said, or not ironically, you know, importantly, the father said, look, my daughter said, Dad, I don't care. I said, I won't get married in the rabbinate. I'll get married in Cyprus. It doesn't matter to me. But he said, I didn't move to Israel so that my daughter could go to Cyprus to get married. I want my daughter to have a chuppah. You know? And it tears your heart out. He's absolutely right. You know? And nobody's wrong here. I actually strongly agree with the rule of the rabbinate. You know, you have to ensure that the people that are married are really Jewish. It's unfortunately the situation in the world today is... Not everybody who says they are Jewish is halachically Jewish. It's just a lot. And so nobody's right. Nobody's wrong in this case. But if we can help people, if we can go the extra mile, if we can do the hard work and help them overcome this hurdle, then you're really saving quality throw in a very small way, every one couple at a time.
It's great. It's really, really good. Let me just kind of broaden the topic. So I know that... you know, you always hear about what's going on with reform and conservative, and they're trying to also do weddings. What's the status today in Israel of reform, conservative, and their ability to do weddings in Israel?
They're not legally, the weddings that every wedding that's done must be done under the auspices of the official religion of the of the official body of religion. So Christians have to do your weddings within the churches, as they were. The Muslims do it in Muslim weddings. And any Jew has to marry in the auspices of a Jewish wedding. And only those people who are authorized to perform weddings, i.e., branch of the official Jewish rabbinate, are approved to do weddings. So for that reason, if you get married in conservative or reform ceremony in Israel, it's not considered legally married. That's considered a legal wedding, as it were, in the state of Israel. And the people could not register their wedding in the Misarafim. The Misarafim won't register it because it doesn't have to be Shur Rabbanut. Mind you, if that same couple travels to Amman and they're married by their conservative rabbi, that if it's recognized in Amman or Cyprus or what have you, then the state of Israel will recognize it. So therefore, if they're married by their conservative rabbi in White Plains, New York, that wedding is recognized by the state of Israel. It's just not recognized if it's done in Israel.
I see. So it's recognized. So someone comes to Israel, they got married by a conservative rabbi. Do they have to prove that both of them are Jewish, or how does that work?
What do you mean? In order to make Aliyah?
Yeah.
So it turns out, this is something that's very confusing to people. There's two sets of rules. There's one set of rules for the Misrad HaPnim, and another rule for the Misrad HaDatot, for the chief rabbinate. So in order to be accepted for Aliyah, you need a letter of Jewish status from any official rabbi of any branch of Judaism around the world. So a Reform rabbi can write a letter and will be accepted for the purposes of Aliyah. And it happens all the time. That being said, if you want to get married in Israel, it has to be accepted not by the Misrad HaPnim, the Interior Ministry, but by the chief rabbinate. So that very same letter that was accepted for a person to get their Tudat Zehut, their identity card, is not accepted by the chief rabbinate. Rather, they have to find an Orthodox source to prove their Jewish status. So you have many, many people who are officially Israelis, but they're not officially accepted, or they, based on the documentation they have, cannot prove that they're halakhically Jewish.
Mm-hmm. So what do people do? I mean, you have people who are married with a non-Orthodox rabbi. They come to make Aliyah. Their kids are now getting ready to get married and so on. What is this a big problem?
It's a huge problem. I mean, it depends on their attitude. If they want to get married in the Rabbanut, it's a very big problem for them. We want them to be married. We want them to have halachic weddings. So it's a challenge for them, and this is where we come in. I see probably, of the 4,000 cases, I see probably 200 to 250 cases a year of people who came from Anglo-speaking. These are only from England, America,
who
wanted to get married.
So
a good chunk of them are, your local Orthodox rabbi writes a letter, a good chunk of them, but a good chunk of them are not, that their parents made Aliyah or their parents didn't make Aliyah, and they were only within the conservative movement. And so in that case, what I'll have them do is I will speak with them, I'll talk to them personally, and try to find an Orthodox source in order to get them married. You know what I'm saying? So if they're, let's say, for example, their mother's sister is Orthodox. I've had cases like that. So as long as I can prove that her mother's sister is Orthodox, if I get a letter from her mother's sister's rabbi, from her aunt's rabbi, that means that her mother's Jewish. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. It's kind of a circuitous way of trying to... So in other words, you have a nice little conservative couple, they've been active in their synagogue in the Jewish center. They're Jewish. There's no question that they have Jewish roots, and they come to Israel. And if they can't prove somehow, or you can't help them prove that they have some connection from some Orthodox source to show that they're Jewish, they could be in trouble.
No, there is an avenue they can go through. The course of last resort is what I'm not allowed to do. I'm not allowed to do what's called birurei yahadut, cannot, based on my judgment, say, I have decided that this person is Jewish. That's the responsibility of a Beit Din. Mm-hmm. So therefore, what we can do is, and I've done a number of times, is we'll send them to a Beit Din in America. I've sent Israelis here who applied online and got status certificates of Jewish status from the Beit Din of America. It actually happened just this week. Another one finally came through. Mm-hmm. This young woman is getting married next month. And her mother came from a conservative home. It's clear that she's Jewish, but I am not allowed, permitted. I don't have the authority to say I believe this person is Jewish. So she had an interview on the phone with one of the rabbanim in the Beit Din of America, and they approved her, and they issued a certificate of Jewish status based on the evidence that she was able to provide. Sometimes that'll be a conservative ketubah. It can be all the way down to, you know, her grandparents were buried in a Jewish cemetery. They took all that into account.
Okay.
So it's not, they can be stuck. And I have to be honest with you. People who come to Israel, they find it very, very, very insulting that they made Aliyah, they're serving the army, and now the Jewish state is telling them, but we don't really know if you're Jewish or not. And it's important to understand that. I understand where they're coming from. It's hard.
Well, no. There's no question. There's no question. It's definitely hard, and the work you're doing is fantastic. So I encourage everyone to read the article. It's really interesting, but it's just a little microcosm of really what's going on. So thank you so much, Rabbi Spolter, for once again contributing to the Jewish Action and being part of it. And I'm sure that the listening audience will enjoy it tremendously.
My pleasure.
Have a great day. Thank you so much.